It's the best time of the year. Football season.
Atlantic keeps it, runs 20, 15, to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Joel Atlantic!
Your number one source for Cyclones football. It's former Cyclones talking Cyclones on CycloneFanatic.com.
Landing out of the shotgun, looking to throw. He fires to the end zone for Daly. Touchdown, Iowa State!
This is Barely Audible with Jeff Woody, Zach Spears, and Austin Arnott on CycloneFanatic.com.
Yes, hello Cyclone Nation. Welcome on into this week's edition of Barely Audible right here on CycloneFanatic.com. I'm former Cyclone offensive lineman Zach Spears, and we'll be joined shortly by former Cyclone greats quarterback Austin Arnott and running back Jeff Woody. Again on Saturday, for the second week in a row, we saw the Cyclones fall late after holding a commanding lead well into the second half. This time, they lost a three-possession lead late in the third quarter on the way to a 38-31 come-from-behind win by Oklahoma State. Quarterback Joel Anning was effective through the air and on the ground, throwing for two touchdowns and also running it 18 times for 100 yards on Saturday. Alan Lazard had six catches, two of them for touchdowns, and Trevor Ryan continued his hot play as of late, pulling in six catches as well and a score of his own. There's obviously plenty to talk about with this team blowing another big lead late. So let's bring in the guys and let's get this thing started. All right, guys, another loss. I keep seeing people online talking about moral victory, or they feel good about it or they feel bad about it. And we all know my thoughts on it last week and how I felt. I was disappointed and I'm feeling bad about this one too. These suck, man. There's nothing worse than losing a game you should have won. Austin, how are you feeling about this loss and then the back-to-back gut-wrenching defeats that were taken away from us?
I actually, and call me the very, very, very uplifting Cyclone fan. I feel good about both of them because of the position that we're in.
Yeah, I saw your tweet. I saw your tweet at the end of the game. It made me want to strangle you.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. And I had people tweeting at me saying, how can a coach blow two leads? And you say that. It's a process, man. I've said it from day one. I agree with Coach Campbell 100%. You can't change culture overnight. When things start to go bad for that football team, the heads go from straight up to straight down.
Yeah. You
look
see
across
it.
The board. You look across the board. Absolutely. And that was what a little bit – I think Saturday was a little bit different from the previous Saturday. Baylor, there was a lot of mojo. Obviously, we're at home, you know, in a good environment. I just think, you know, we kind of stalled out at the end there, couldn't get a first down. Defense was tired. Whereas this game, defense again was tired. But, you know, there's different – you know, we're on the road. There's, you know – Oklahoma State is loud. They have those stupid paddles in that south end zone. There's a lot of things that are contributing to what happened on Saturday. But I just think this is the team when they start the game out very confident. And then as the game rolls on and they get tired, so does their confidence. It gets tired and it goes in the dirt.
Jeff, your thoughts?
Well, I'm kind of with Austin a little bit here where I feel okay about it because, I mean – the thing about it is, like, if you see something that's messed up and you know that it's messed up and, like, you take your car into the auto shop and the mechanic goes, I don't know, looks just jacked up to me. You're like, okay, well, it was driving fine and then it stopped driving fine. What's wrong? And that's what happens if just, like, one blown lead. Like, that happens. It just kind of an inexplicable somebody blows a lead. We do the exact same thing twice in a row. Well, now there's a definitive problem to be solved, and it's now your car has the same issue when you go into the mechanic, but you can be like, okay, well, you know, the muffler's bad or whatever. I don't know cars. So you have something that's expressly wrong that you can fix, and to be able to pinpoint something like that, it's kind of like the first step to recovery is now that it's happened two obvious times in a row, the players can look themselves in the mirror and say that it's an actual issue. It's not – like there's no way around it. So the thing that I'm sort of positive about is they're playing really well, and now there's a definitive clear cut. This is the issue. This is what we need to fix.
Yeah, my thing is the team has clearly gotten better, and I'm thrilled about that. And I'm not blaming the coach staff for this type of losses. I mean, I think your analogy going back to last week about finally beating your dad or your older brother in something for the first time, and all you did was go out there and you just played your ass off. You did what you needed to do to get to that point. Then you look up the scoreboard and you realize, oh, man, I'm about to win this. I better not lose. And you start gripping everything a little bit tighter and things, you feel like you're moving a little bit slower. And next thing you know, a team with a far more talent has, you know, passed you, or your dad's made that layup, or he's lapped you in that race for the first time, and that's happened. This team's going to have to win these types of games eventually. And like you said in your column this week at the Des Moines Register, Jeff, that it's going to take, you know, maybe even lucking into one of these wins to fix this issue. And so I like those comments. And by the way, if you guys don't read Jeff's thing, it posts every Monday afternoon, usually, the Des Moines Register. He writes a special column there, and really good stuff in there, as always, Jeff.
Generally, I write that at about 12:30 on Sunday night into Monday morning, because I don't know why, but I'm at my most creative from like 11 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Brilliant.
It's weird. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, so what was the turning point in the game for you, Jeff?
Epps. It was the Epps fumble.
What?
That's what it was.
What did you feel like, what do you feel like made that change in the game?
Well, it's one of those things where they're, like you said, they were scoreboard checking at that point. Like Austin, like you were saying before, and like Austin was saying before, they were scoreboard checking at that point, and they're like, oh my God, we are up by 17. We're up by 17 points. How are we here?
Yeah.
Oh my God, how are we here? And then all of a sudden that one thing happens and you go, is this how we lose? This is how we lose. This is the thing that starts us to lose. And they're just kind of like looking for a way to – looking for an excuse – or not an excuse, like a reason for them to justify this a downward slide.
Yeah.
And that Epps fumble, because it was so inexplicable. It was not something – Epps is a super – he's a possession receiver. He's not a guy who's big on – he's not a fumble guy. So it's just that something like that shouldn't happen. It doesn't happen. And then when it does happen, it just causes everybody to crash down.
Yeah. My turning point in the game, let me pull up my text messages here. My turning point in the game was, I believe I texted you, Jeff Woody, and I said, we are good, because we were up 17 points with 3:38 left in the third quarter. And Alexander Robinson, friend of the show, dear friend of all of ours, texts back, ain't no way in hell we're going to lose this game. And you responded immediately with, don't say that. Don't you dare say that, Alexander. And he responds, listen, dude, we are safe here. Houston is the real team in trouble tonight. And what happened from there, Jeff? Do you want to update the listener base? What happened from there? Proceeding to cuss A-Rob out for the next 2 hours and him having to apologize.
Then we went fumble, punt, interception, punt, loss.
That was the turning point they gave for me, and I wanted to strangle A-Rob. I was done with the text message group at that point. So the next question is, how do they keep blowing these big leads? And obviously I want to talk about after that how they can handle these leads differently, and I think that's obvious. But, Austin, what are you seeing blowing these big leads? I mean, Jeff kind of touched on it. I touched on it a little bit. What are you seeing? Anything on the offense or the defense in particular?
I think as far as it goes, you know, we touched on a lot of reasons as to why they're playing the way that they are. Confidence is an issue. Obviously, stamina is an issue. I just think there was two totally different situations for the offense, speaking about Saturday. You remember 2 weeks ago with Baylor, you know, drives were stalling out. We couldn't run the ball, couldn't get first downs. And then Baylor eventually comes down, runs the clock, gets the kick. Well, it seemed like towards the end of the game on Saturday, there wasn't that run the ball first mentality. We were trying to continue to be aggressive and eat up chunks of yards, which is great. I mean, I'm all for that. But then that didn't work. So you have two different type of things that happen in each game. You know, obviously the aggressive and then the passive. Yeah. So we got to find that happy medium. Wherever that is, whatever that is, we got to find that. I think that's where it comes into effect of you think, you know, the outside looking in, you think of, okay, as a coach, how can we blow two big leads like this? And that's where it's, you know, the coaches have got to be better. the players can do so much, but the coaches have got to put them in a situation to be successful. And then the coaches will take full responsibility for that. They didn't do a good enough job to help win that football game, and the players didn't either. So it's on both sides. It's not just one guy here, one guy there. Because I'm, and you guys know as well as I do, that's never – football is a game with 11 guys, and you know everyone's input works. But yeah. In a situation like this, it's got it's both sides. Coaches and players alike have got to, you know, bow their necks when it gets down, like Coach Chizik used to say, when it's a nut cutter, and you gotta make things happen, and we're not making things happen at the end of games.
Well, and the other thing about to kind of piggyback off that idea is, it's the coaching that may take place is not necessarily in X's and O's. It's not in. We're going to throw a different pass, or we're going to run a different concept, or we're going to bring a tight end, whatever. It's in understanding your players and then being able to tailor the message to them. Because if you're, you're getting frustrated because guys are, and I'm not saying they do this, because I honestly have no idea what their demeanor is inside the huddle as they're before they go to the sideline or on the sideline. But you're naturally frustrated that another elite is evaporating if, for whatever reason, you start shouting like, hey, you know, you guys need to pull your head out of your ass and you start doing this, whatever. And there are guys that don't respond well to yelling. Well, that's going to do the opposite effect of what you want. It's going to get guys to shut down. Where on the flip side of that is if guys are too relaxed and you're kind of not lethargic, you're yourself kind of zen, and then they need to get jumped on. Well, coaching-wise, you have to be there. Now, the other thing that I was going to say about this is, players also have to understand that one play, even in the fourth quarter, one play still does not make the game. Where, correct. Like, that's what I think in the necessary passing downs, I think that's what Joel was trying to do. And even once we got to, like, the third and five or third and six or something like that, like, he was still trying to, like, score on every single play, where it's like, because that was the only time that I really got, like, angry at the screen, at the Magic TV box. Was when Joel held and took a sack. And yep. held and held and took a sack. Because he's not doing that because he doesn't see something. He's doing that because he's waiting for somebody to get open, like, deep. And that, you just got to understand, like, sometimes the best play is a 14-yard out, and then you get another set of downs and live to play another day. And I think that's a pretty accurate depiction of what the players are doing, is that they got to get a knockout block, or they got to have a home run pass, or they got to have a 25-yard run, or whatever. It's just still playing normal football, and the coach is understanding the mentality.
So we I want to build off what Jeff said though, real quick, guys. Talk about sacks, 7 sacks on Saturday, and you can never place blame on. I mean, it's the offensive line and the quarterback together. Like we talked about early on in the year when we were getting sacked and Joel was holding on the ball too long. There was a little bit of both on Saturday. So that's one thing that, you know, obviously late in the game, you can't take sacks. Clock's important. So they're being the outlier, that 7 sacks, and then also you have two turnovers from Jacob Park where, you know, Blanding doesn't turn it over and has 2 touchdowns. But still, turnovers and sacks, we've said this before, we're not good enough to give up 7 sacks or take 7 sacks and turn the ball over twice. You guys know that.
Yeah. So let's talk about, you know, you guys mentioned how can they handle these leagues differently and come out with wins. It's all well and good. But I think an easy way to come away with a win, especially on Saturday, was run the football. Why in the hell did they stop running the football? We had like over 150 yards rushing going into the fourth quarter. And Mike Warren touches the ball has three carries in the second half. Montgomery only has 1. I understand they go into the locker room, they make adjustments, and things that come out, and obviously whatever they adjusted in the third quarter worked. But in the fourth quarter, it's time to start going and trying to win a football game, wrapping it up, take time off the clock. And hell, Gundy's out there handing you possessions, kneeling the ball, giving you the ball back before the end of the second quarter, and then we take a knee. You know what I'm saying? You got to go into these types of games. Every upset that I was ever a part of, all 3 of us were ever a part of, we went in and we made plays on special teams. We had to do trick plays, and we grinded out these victories, and we controlled the clock. And my roommate, who's an Oklahoma State graduate and season ticket holder of Oklahoma State, was at the game. He texted me in the middle of third quarter, and he said, well, damn, you guys got us again this year. And I texted him, and I said, just you wait. You guys are going to win this football game. Because not only are they this team and Coach Campbell battling uphill fight against what happened last week, and the team looking at the scoreboard saying, oh, great, this is coming again after James Washington scores that late third-quarter touchdown to cut it to a 10-point lead. But they're also battling years and years and years of this in the football program's tradition of expecting the worst to happen, and most times, more often than not, the worst thing does happen. So, Jeff, an easy way to win this football game is start running out the clock and eating up, you know, possession times. Why in the hell did they stop running the football?
That one, I don't know. And, I mean, from
but
a rational perspective...
But shouldn't we know? Shouldn't someone have asked him?
From a rational perspective, there really isn't a good reason why there wasn't more running. The only logical explanation that I could come up with is that we still scored 14 points in the third quarter. You score 14 points in every single quarter, you're going to win that game going away.
Correct.
So the game plan that Oklahoma State, because we had a bunch of yards rushing, the game plan that Oklahoma State had is they were going to commit more to the run to stop the run to make Iowa State beat them in the air. Well, Iowa State started beating them in the air, which worked, and then all of a sudden they stopped beating them in the air. Well, then that's trying to restart the running game, which is definitely possible, but sometimes you just forget. As a coordinator, they're not perfect. They're really good, but they're not perfect. And sometimes they probably – like if you were to ask Tom Manning in a candid conversation, do you wish you probably would have run the ball more? He'd probably say yes, but I don't think you regret the way you do it because there were plenty of opportunities to just make the play. I don't know how many drops Lazard had in the second half, but it was probably double as many as he's had in any half in any game. And right. That was – the running the ball isn't the problem. It's the making plays when they are there to be made. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Exactly. Make a play.
I agree with that, yeah. Awesome. Your thoughts on the whole situation, not running the ball. I understand. We catch a couple passes. We're probably not sitting here talking about this. But an easy way for guys not to have to catch a pass is run behind that offensive line that's playing well for you.
Well, and the biggest thing about college football and when you watch teams, especially in the Big 12, especially when you have a no huddle offense, rhythm. Rhythm is a huge thing, and it looked like we were out of sync trying. I mean, granted, we didn't try very hard to run the football, but the times we did, it looked out of sync. It looked like, you know, we were maybe seeing a different front. I can't confirm that. I mean, but it looked like there was something different. I mean, and obviously went away from that play calling because of what happened in the third quarter. I agree with you guys. It's just – I think a rhythm has to be continue to be built, and to have that 50-50, you know, that's where they want to be, 50-50 run pass, and, you know, it wasn't that way in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. So enough about the negatives. Let's talk about some of the things that went well, the positives from the game on Saturday, and some maybe roll up some of the positives as all. You know, Coach Manning, I think his play calling's been exceptional since week two. This mm-hmm. offense is really starting to come together. I keep saying it, and I hate to harp on them across the state, but I would love to play the Iowa Hawkeyes right now and see how we stack up, as they're not playing as great as football as they were in week two when we played them, and I think we're light years better than we were then. I'd love to line up in Iowa City again and play football, and I know that's neither here nor there, but I think Coach Manning has come a long way since there, and certainly he's brought that offensive line a long way. The offensive line continued to play well for the most part on Saturday and have been for the last few weeks. Jeff, you thought the defense was better on Saturday?
Yeah. We didn't miss 22 tackles.
Well, that's a start. They still gave up 450.
That's a start.
They still gave up 450, though.
Yeah, but that's an average game for Oklahoma State. It's not a below-average performance for Iowa State's defense. So the thing that I liked that we played better, and I still wouldn't say it's good, but we played better up the middle, and that's defensive tackles, interior linebackers. And that was where most of the issue was coming from, like we were talking about in the Iowa game and the San Jose State game and the Baylor game, was right in the heart of the defense. Well, that was demonstrably better this week than it was last week. When guys like DeMond Tucker are able to get penetration and they're able to get not necessarily have the offensive line move backwards or stalemate, they were able to push it back in Oklahoma State's lap. Granted, Oklahoma State's not a great rushing team, but still, to be able to cause disruption in the middle of the defensive line while still doing your job allows linebackers to make plays. And I think in Monday's presser, Coach Campbell explicitly called out Brian Mills and Kane Seeley for having Willie Harvey and Kane Seeley for having some of their best games that he's seen. is because the interior defensive line was finally able to get push. And I also am pretty happy with the defense, considering Kamari didn't play.
Yeah.
So good point. You have your best defensive player out, and you improve tackles, you improve fits, and you improve pressure. I was pretty pleased with the progress of the defense. Now, again, we are not good yet. We are not good yet, but we are better. So
are you talking about the defense or the team as a whole?
The defense. The team as a whole. I would say the offense is nearing.
Yeah, it's nearing good.
Yeah. It's not good yet. It's nearing good. I think the defense is somewhere between below average and adequate, and they're moving up. So
can they get to good enough by the next few weeks?
We'll see. So I was talking about this on CFTV today, which we had a little bit of sound issues during that, so you don't need to go back and rewatch that. But one of the things generally speaking, I like to talk about like the kind of intangibles, like what you need to think and what you need to feel to do football right. Well, there's only really one thing that's not an X's and O's or emotional question. We don't have enough defensive linemen. And that's the only from a objective, a literal standpoint, because in the fourth quarter and you run seven plays or eight plays in an entire quarter, the defense is out there a lot, and the defensive line is the one that gets the most tired.
The bigger
and
bodies.
You only got two at each position that are capable of playing. You need more meat. You need more dudes, and we don't have that right now. So that's the only thing that is going to hinder me from thinking they're going to get to be good or good enough,
yeah,
is that they don't really have the defensive line depth to hold up in a long game.
Yeah, Austin, while Jeff over there is begging for more meat, the Iowa State
context. Okay. We're talking about inappropriate
great,
comments.
Great.
My, so you know how like on the new iMessage
yep,
thing,
yep,
how you can like a comment.
Yep.
So you said something about Tebow putting his hand on somebody and healing them
a human
at a game
today. Yes.
Uh-huh. So what my response to that was, my ass. That was the only text, is just my ass.
Yep.
And Austin liked that text, so then I get an alert on my phone that said Austin liked my ass. So, hey,
beautiful screenshot.
I'll take it where you get it, man.
Beautiful screenshot. I hope you tease the podcast tomorrow on Twitter with that screenshot.
Austin liked my ass. Yep. Yes, he did.
Yes.
He did. He did like my ass.
So my original question, Austin, my original question is, the ISU's passing game was unstoppable for the most part. And we'll let Jeff touch on some of that, but I want to talk to you about the quarterback play of it. I think Lanning is starting to grab a hold of this QB1 and really take control of it. You know, and Park is still – I think we're still going to see Park at times, but not nearly as much, and he won't be as much a part of the conversation as he was a few weeks ago. I think this is Joel Lanning's job now. You know, Park threw two interceptions on Saturday. Would you agree with me on that statement?
I think when you look at the Iowa State passing game and look what Lanning's done compared to Parks, especially last game was immeasurable. You look at what Lanning did last game, 19 of 32, again, hovering around 60%. Took a step back, I think, as far as, you know, completion percentage, and that's apparent in the stats. But going forward, I think they'll still play Park. I think he's still going to get some reps because they want to make sure he's ready. But I think Lanning, and this has changed. I remember San Jose State game, I tweeted something about it's hard to take Park out of the game when he's throwing like this. Well, I think what we have is kind of that roller coaster effect with a new quarterback with Park. Mm-hmm. And Jeff alluded to this earlier in our first podcast about how his ceiling is very high. Well, you saw a couple plays on Saturday where his ceiling was very high, and he tried to do something that, you know, tried to force a ball in there that probably wasn't – a couple balls in there that probably weren't the best idea, and they got intercepted, as well as taking a sack as well. So, obviously, when you look at Joel and look at Park, the resemblance is always this. Probably better arm talent from Park as far as completing balls that intermediate to downfield, better accuracy downfield. But I think mentally, Lanning is the guy. The last three games, he's been incredible. As far as leading the team, making the throws that he needs to, finding number five, finding Trevor Ryan. I think those two are the key ingredients, Ryan and Lazard. If we can get those guys started early, that always helps. So I think going away from now,
They're still going to play two quarterbacks, but we might not see as much of Park, like, you know, kind of where we talk about Baylor. That's the ideal situation. I mean, obviously we want to win that game, but would like to see more of Lanning than Park.
Jeff, what did you see out of the passing game as far as routes, receivers, things like that? Austin kind of covered the quarterback play. If you want to jump in on the quarterback play question, be my guest too.
Well, and so this is Jacob Park is Baby Steel Chance.
Yeah.
He's Baby Steel Chance. And the reason why I say that is they're exceptionally athletically talented and not dumb. Like, they're sharp guys, but they have overconfidence in their athletic ability because of how much they have. That, like, the interception that he threw down the field was a stupid play. It was triple covered. It was stupid. You don't throw that ball. There's a wide open guy running the dig. He didn't read it. He just threw it. The concept was a deep dig and then a post right behind it. And if the safety plays back with the post, you throw the dig. If the place the safety plays up with the dig, you throw the post. It's an easy read, and he wanted to throw a home run post. Well, it's not open. You can't do that, especially in the Big 12, where there's speed everywhere. If nothing else, the Big 12 doesn't have great defenses, but they have generally pretty good secondaries because they have to play against the pass all the time. So you can't force a ball where you don't need to, and I think that's the thing he's going to have to learn, because he played JUCO ball for so long, and JUCO ball is similar to high school ball, where if you're a better athlete, you can do whatever the hell you want. If you're not reading it right, great, fine. You're just going to throw it where you're going to throw it. And I think that's the thing he's going to have to learn, and that's the thing that Joel has learned. So he's learning how to read the right play. And the analogy that I like to use is Monte Morris is going to be, by the time he's done, the all-time assist leader at Iowa State. And Monte doesn't make the bounce the ball between the legs and then, you know, do the white chocolate or skip to my Lou, pass it behind your head thing. He's going to drive into the lane, get somebody to pull, and make an easy kick-out pass to a shooter. Like, it's simple, easy plays. But when you make the simple, easy play, you succeed. From a wide receiver standpoint, if this group continues to improve at the rate that they're improving, aside from the drops that we had in kind of crunch time, if this group continues to improve at the rate we're improving, we could see one of the best wide receiving cores by the end of this season. Right?
Absolutely. I wish I had these guys. I love my guys. Colin Franklin, Jake Williams, I had said, Marquise, Houston. Sorry, fellas. With the exception of Colin.
Joel Zetech.
You know.
Joel Zetech
play. You know, we had a hodgepodge group and guys that worked their tail off, but we did not have talent like this. These guys are talented.
Yeah, and they're starting to get it. And I think the nice thing is again, to use the basketball analogy, Alan Lazard is George Niang, where there is so much effort that has to be paid to him that everybody else is starting to become open. That everybody else, and they're now, like, correct, they're acknowledging that. So the coaching staff is using Allen as a really good decoy. Like Dondre's big pass play. It was a bubble go. Allen was the number two receiver. Trevor Ryan was in the backfield, motioned out, and they play fake the bubble to him. And Dondre was the outside guy. Well, they end up twisting. They run, basically, Allen kind of runs a vertical and kind of fades to the sideline a little bit. And Dondre, being the number one receiver, the farthest outside guy, runs basically to the middle of the upright, and they end up crossing. Well, they end up crossing, and the guy over Allen is supposed to pass him off and take up Dondre. But Allen is such a threat that the guy stayed with him and left Dondre wide-ass open. So this wide receiving group and this tight end group, which is pretty much wide receivers throwing-wise, but this wide receiver group quarterback relationship is now understanding the fact that Allen is going to be hard to get the ball to because they're going to focus everything on him. So you're going to have to do something on the other side of the ball with Ryan and Jones and Epps and Daly and guys like that. And they're starting to step up even more. So I'm very pleased with where this wide receiving group is going. Now they just have to, again, make plays when they're in front of you in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, so I want to now switch to the last part of wrapping up this Oklahoma State game. I guess we kind of wrapped up the Oklahoma State game altogether. And before we get to the Texas preview, this is something I wouldn't say it's keeping me up at night, but it's something I've definitely been tossing and turning and thinking about. With how well this team has been playing, and if they would have won the last two games, or at least one of the last two games, with how well they're playing and what's left on the schedule ahead, I don't think it would have been a stretch to think that this team somehow, some way, could have still been a bowl-eligible team with six wins. I do think that they beat Texas this weekend. I just think that they've had Texas' number, and I've watched Texas, and Texas is all over my screen down here in Texas all the time. I just don't think they're very good. I think they beat Texas, or I think they beat Kansas as well. And then you're looking at Texas Tech team that couldn't stop me, and then a West Virginia team that's untested so far, and then I think a little above average Kansas State team. Now, I talk out of my ass all the time.
And TCU and Oklahoma.
Right, but we've already...
Not TCU, and Oklahoma, yeah.
Yeah, and OU. Obviously, I don't expect them to beat OU, and we've already lost to TCU. But I talk out of my ass all the time, and it's pretty well documented that I'm an idiot. But am I an idiot for thinking that there's still plenty of winnable games on the schedule, and this team could have been a bowl-eligible team had they won at least one of the last two games, if not both the games?
Well, don't rule it out yet. I mean, there's 5-7 teams that get into bowl. I mean, again, it'd have to be a stretch. They have to win this game.
Well, I'm talking about
they
six,
have to
I'm
win.
I'm talking about six wins on the schedule.
Six. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If they
no,
won the
you're,
last
you're
two
not,
there was on there.
Oh, if they won the last two, they're getting to six because they only need three. And with the confidence that they're playing with, yep. A Texas team that ain't that good, Kansas that's pretty bad, and then you have one – steal one other one from the rest of the schedule, and I would expect that to happen. But I don't know how it's – are they still calculating with, like, that academic percentage who gets the 5-7? Is that – Austin, do you know, or Zach?
I have
like,
no idea.
Who the 5-7 teams are that qualify?
I don't know, man.
Nope.
No clue.
I don't know. But 5-7 is not totally out of the realm of possibility because, like you were saying, you have – Texas and Kansas and Texas Tech and Kansas State all left on the schedule, not including anybody else.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's definitely doable.
Yep. All right. So let's move on to the Texas game. We've put a bow on that Oklahoma State loss. Oh, and one more thing. Jeff and Austin, I don't know how much you listened to the game. I know that
oh my God.
You were on vacation with your girlfriend Chelsea, and I know you guys had a great time, but Jeff and I had the pleasure of listening to the worst color commentator in the history of sports. Who was
dude.
Ahmad Brooks was that?
Ahmad Brooks.
God, he was just bad. He was blatantly, like, aggressively going after players of ours, like Trevor Ryan for not going up and trying to get a ball. He made several mistakes on names and, like, just situational calls, and he said that Joel Lanning should have thrown a ball away. And instead of taking the sack, but had he took a sack for like a loss of 3 or 4 yards, but had he thrown the ball away, it would have been intentional grounding.
And
it would have been a 15-yard penalty?
And I've done color work before, and you've done play-by-play before. One of the things you don't do, especially on television, is you don't say
Yes.
You don't fill sound. You have visuals. If you don't know what to say, say nothing.
Yes.
And that... I don't think we're – your buddy was at the game. I was going to say, I'm sure that we're – from a Iowa State perspective, I know we weren't the only – you and I aren't the only ones that didn't like that guy. I'm sure from an Oklahoma State perspective, they probably weren't huge fans of him. And now, I don't know how long that guy's been doing it, and I wasn't great my first couple times doing it either. So he may just be new.
And
he probably will get better.
Have him on ESPN3 then if he's new, okay? Don't have him on a national ESPNU call. That shit was deplorable. I literally thought I was going to log on to Awful Announcing on Sunday morning and see a highlight reel of bloopers from this guy. I mean, he was that bad. And I hate being hard on color guys because, Jeff, like you said, you're a color guy. I'm the color guy for Boston College basketball. It's not an easy job, and it's tough, and you're on audio, and everything can be streamed now, and everyone can listen to it, and everyone can voice their opinion on it. I hate being tough, but this guy was bad for several different reasons. So that brings me to my next point. We're playing Texas. And as Texas always does, they get to tell ESPN what channel they want to play on when they play Iowa State. And they're going to be on Longhorn Network. So, Austin, you live in Charlotte. And, Jeff, you live in Des Moines. Now, I know Des Moines trying to get some stuff with it on TV. But, Austin, do you have Longhorn Network there? You live across the street from the SEC Network. But do you have the Longhorn Network, Austin?
I do not, and nor do I ever want that pitiful network.
How are you going to watch
the
game?
You can get Ricky Williams and Vince Young talking about football.
Football.
About trees and beers, absolutely. Now, the one thing, here's my bold take about Longhorn Network. I will watch it next season because Tom Herman's going to be the head coach of Texas Longhorns.
Hey,
that's when I'll watch Longhorn Network.
While we're talking about Tom Herman, if Iowa State beats Texas on Saturday, whether it's convincing or not, does Charlie Strong get fired on the spot?
I think they love tipping him. I think they do.
Here's the deal. I actually talked to Herman a little bit this week. I hadn't talked to him since
breaking
scoops.
News.
I have no scoop. All we did is, you know, Herm, all we did was we talked about Confucius quotes. I sent him a quote, basically, you know, a Confucius quote. You know, Coach Herman is notorious for giving out those huge player packets that, you know, God bless Coach Herman's soul. We never looked at him except for the quote because we had to read it out loud. You know, going back and forth with him, we were just talking about, you know, how his guys, he's like, you know, my guys are going to respond. They're going to be great. But it just got me thinking about, you know, Texas has gave up 40 in the last three games. Well, let's go this way. Texas has given up more than 31 points four times this year out of five. In the last three games, they've lost to Cal, gave up 50, lost to Oklahoma State, gave up 49, lost to Oklahoma last week in gut-wrenching fashion like Iowa State did in the past, and gave up 45. We're gonna hang 40, at least 40 on these guys. I truly believe that. And yeah, I'm with you guys. And this, we're being bold because, you know, people, we're barely audible, so we need to have something that people listen to.
And we got like two dozen. We got like two dozen loyal listeners that listen to the show.
Exactly. And you know, we're on the cusp of having maybe 25, 26 solid listeners. We're close. but I can confidently say that Charlie Strong will not last at the University of Texas this year, and Tom Herman will be the next coach of Texas Longhorns.
That's breaking news right there.
No, it's not breaking news because it's not true yet. It's not factual.
That's like me getting off the phone with a coach about a basketball player and hanging up.
We talked nothing about Texas.
And then in the next tweet saying,
Coach Herman is completely happy at Houston, and my next bold take is Jimbo Fisher is going to coach LSU next year. What do you guys think about that?
Ooh.
You're really going out on a limb with all your takes today. Oh, wow. That Charlie Strong's not going to make it at Texas. And that Herman's going to be at Texas, and Jimbo's going to be the head coach at LSU.
Anytime there's rumored news like this, it never happens the way it's supposed to. You know that. Yeah. We were supposed to have Brian Kelly. We hired Gene Chizik. I mean, come on. These things never fall in line.
Brian Kelly. We could do a podcast on that clown if you want to.
Well, absolutely, we could. I'm just saying, he was an available name when Chizik was hired. But anyway, he was the obvious name, and everybody wanted him. Everyone in LSU wants Jimbo, and everyone in Texas wants Tom Herman, because Herman coached underneath Mac Brown. Obviously, the ties are there.
He's got a master's degree.
But let's get back to the point, is that Texas defense can't stop anybody. Yes. So, therefore, Iowa State is going to score some points. However, we still have that ugly head rearing in of, can we finish a football game? And I think this week we do.
Go ahead.
Real quick, like I said, they still suck on defense. There's no way they should be two touchdown favorites over us. I think that is disrespectful. And they've lost three games in a row, and their only wins were against UTEP in a really bad 2-4 Notre Dame team. So the last time in Austin, we lost 48-45 in 2014, which is, I believe, is a game we should have won. We got cheated out of with Jeremiah George's fumble six. And then
No. That was different. This last time we were in Texas, we went down and scored with 40 some seconds left and to tie the game, and then they run a freaking wheel route, and Jared Brackens gets roasted, and pick up 45 on first down just after Sam Richardson drives down and throws a touchdown to E.J. Bibbs, and then they come back and hit the walk-off. I remember that because I was watching it at Benchwarmers in Ankeny, friend of Cyclone Fanatic, watching it at Benchwarmers in Ankeny, and they didn't pick up the game until midway through the second quarter.
Wow. And so then 2013 was Jeremiah George's game. He got cheated out of touchdown, 41-40. So in our last three meetings against the Longhorns, we were outscoring them 36-28. So like Austin said, we're going to score 40 points. Their defense sucks. They've already demoted their defense coordinator. And the head coach, who's supposed to be the defensive specialist, Charlie Strong, is running the defense. And they gave up, 45 points last week. So I do think if Iowa State wins this game Saturday, he gets Lane Kiffin, and they just – take his Suburban away from him right there and make him take an Uber home from the football game on Saturday. And I don't think we're going out on a limb. When we beat the shit out of him last year 24-0, that was embarrassing for him and his program. You can't lose twice to to Iowa State in your career at Texas and expect to keep your
back
job.
Back-to-back.
Yeah, and after the week after giving up 40, however much they gave to OU.
Yeah, and the thing that – so to put a little more realistic bow on the Iowa State scoring a shit ton of points against Texas is the thing that Texas – that everybody always points out immediately is they're a really talented football team. Of course they are. It's Texas. They get five-star recruits all the time. But if that's like a backhanded compliment in the coach world, they're really talented. Because a compliment is when you watch Kansas State, they're a really disciplined football team, or they're a really sound football team. They're good football players, not they're very talented. So what Texas has, they have a bunch of athletes that have no idea how to play the sport. They're covering what they want to cover. They're fitting where they want to fit. Their eyes are where they want their eyes to be. They're not a disciplined team, and that's what Charlie's supposed to be hanging his hat on. And now they have one of the most undisciplined secondaries and undisciplined defenses in the conference.
So
outside of maybe Texas Tech.
So, Jeff.
If that is historically bad.
Jeff, I remember when I was growing up, they were like defensive back university, and their quarterbacks were like Heisman Trophy contenders, and their offensive lines were like the best. It's completely different now. But I want to go back to the Longhorn Network deal. Have you figured out how you're going to be able to watch it, Des Moines? Because a lot of our listeners are in Central Iowa, and they need to know how to watch it. Is MediaCom going to play it, or?
I think.
Because Cyclones TV is running it, correct?
Yes. So Cyclones.tv is carried on MediaCom, and I'm pretty sure that if you have MediaCom, I don't know if they give like the one-time free access to that channel as the game is going on or not.
Can't wait.
I don't have that. So I think I'm just going to be going to I might be just going to a Wild Wings or something like that.
Or just
unless I can steal it off somebody's online, yeah.
And I was thinking about this. Should I, like, live Periscope my feed of it here? Because I have Longhorns Network,
ooh,
obviously. That comes standard. How many hits –
you want followers?
No, I'm just saying –
Periscope followers?
How many hits on that Periscope do you think I'd get if I streamed the whole game with audio on it and everything?
Man, you get shut down. Oh. Somebody come after you, they shut you down.
Dude, they're not going to shut me down, man.
Hey, let me ask you a question.
Hey, you already been shut out.
What the hell is Periscope?
Oh, Grandpa.
Don't lie.
Come on, Grandpa.
I had it and deleted it. It was the dumbest thing I ever had. But anyway.
I never used it.
Periscope.
You know what Periscope's good for? UFC fights.
Yes.
When you just want to watch one. It's really good for UFC fights.
You don't want to go to a sports bar for it? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to go spend $6 for a beer. And I don't want
to. Okay, you guys can have fun watching
fight.
Greg Hardy.
No.
You know,
oh
MMA
God.
Fighting. Like, give me a break. You guys, you and your
Conor
UFC,
McGregor.
Whatever.
Conor McGregor.
Brock Lesnar. I mean, give me a break.
You're just saying names now. You guys have no idea who's actually fighting.
I only watch when Conor McGregor fights, and I go to Boston to watch it at an Irish pub, and it's freaking
that
amazing.
Would be fun.
And it's awesome.
That would be fun.
That's how I watch
but
Conor
the,
McGregor.
You know what?
The Greg,
he sucks,
the Greg
too.
Hardy thing? Okay, whoa.
Conor McGregor doesn't suck. You watch your mouth.
You watch it.
Because he can throw a Dasani water bottle at a guy. That's it. Yeah.
Get fined
48 hours.
Get fined 150K. I don't know.
How do you find someone in a sport like that? It's a heathen. I mean, it's a heathen sport. How do you find someone in a sport like that? What are grounds for finding someone?
Which brings us to why Greg Hardy fits in so well. Heathen.
Yeah, exactly. He is not a great human.
Nope.
And
Greg Hardy? Come on.
I would really enjoy watching Stipe Miocic, who is and Cain Velasquez in the top
that
two.
That sounds like a Sacramento Kings forward.
It does. That's great.
Oh man. But yeah, I would like to watch Greg Hardy get his ass kicked, because he'll be a heavyweight, because he's like 260, 270. Love so he'll have to fight at heavy, which is 285. So you're going to have Cain Velasquez, who's a two-time NCAA champ at Arizona State in wrestling, who's now just beating the shit out of people. Yeah, get Cain Velasquez in a ring with Greg Hardy.
He probably has a few ass whippings.
Whatever.
Austin, hit me with the gambling stuff.
All right, man, to the best part of our podcast, why people listen to us, probably not why, but We're going to go to the gambling section.
Good roll, man. This table's hot. I want some of this money. Get me in this game. Come on.
Sir, you're aware that there's a $50,000 buy-in this evening?
If that's the case, give me $100,000 in chip. Let me have a Diet Pepsi and some hot wings.
$100,000.
Come on, man.
Baylor's at home against Kansas. They win by 100 or 105? Last week's picks. Well, you know what, guys? Who ended up winning that Tennessee A&M game, Zach Spears?
Texas A&M did, as I called it.
I know, as you called it. Jeff Woody and Austin.
What was the line, though? Wrong. The line was 7.5. I took Tennessee in the points. They won by 7.
And I took
it
eight.
Was 7. The line was 7. We pushed. The line was 7.5. Line was 7.5, and I took Tennessee because that's way too many points at home to a Volunteers team. Give me the damn win!
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it was 7.
Jeff's
but
correct.
We'll take the push.
Jeff's correct. You and Jeff won that because I said A&M will beat them by at least 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, but
7.5.
Yeah.
7.5 was the line. At the time 7. Of the bet, okay, it's at worst a push. It's at best Tennessee covered. You know who didn't cover?
This week,
you
yeah,
know who didn't
exactly.
cover is the NFL team.
We all were on the Cincinnati Bengals,
oh
and that did
God.
Not cover.
How about that?
Bengals, they ain't real.
What? Austin's new thing, guys, is when he sees someone, a player or a team that is not good and people talk about them good, he always says they ain't real really loud. So if you start seeing us do that on Twitter, that's why.
You ain't real.
They ain't real.
They ain't real. Here's
or,
a test.
Oregon ain't again, real.
And speaking about moving into they ain't real, it's time to find out if West Virginia is for real. They are 4-0 on the road at Texas Tech. They're a 1-point favorite at Texas Tech, which means to me that Vegas thinks that they ain't real. So what do you guys think about West Virginia, 1-point favorite going to Lubbock?
I don't know. Can they score 50? Because Texas Tech at home is going to drop 50. Like, it's at least 47.
Yeah.
So can West Virginia keep pace?
They can't stop him. That Arizona State guy touched the ball like 16 times, scored 11 times. Like, they can't stop him.
Oh, that's
anybody.
True.
No, just give me a pick.
That's a tough one, number 4. Give me
well, of course.
Give me the Fight in Lubbock, guys. The Fight in Tortillas.
The Fighting Tortillas. We got one for the Fighting Tortillas.
I'll take Tech, just because I don't know if West Virginia has the firepower to keep up with them.
Yep, we're all 3 on it. I like Texas Tech.
Well,
Cliff Kingsbury.
West
Cliff,
Virginia
Cliff
wins.
Kingsbury, Cliff Kingsbury at home. Chalk it up. Chalk it up. Okay, moving on to the NFL. This week, we got kind of an AFC West showdown. Oakland, which I think they are real, and Kansas City, time to prove if they're real or not. They go to Oakland. Oakland is a 1-point favorite at home currently. Late kickoff. What do you guys think?
Well, Oakland's won all their games basically by comebacks, but I do think they have the best offensive lineman in the league. Where do you go to school, guys? What's
biased.
His name?
What? That guy is a monster.
His name's Kelechi Assembly. Where did he go to school? I don't remember. Oh, I
he was the second. And what a travesty that he was the 60th overall pick. I mean, what a complete and total joke.
Yeah, he proved that wrong. I saw a stat, Brett Bloom, friend of the show, CycloneFanatic.com. He posted a tweet yesterday that says, Iowa State football players have more NFL starts than Oklahoma State players that played combined from the players that played against each
okay,
other.
Okay, time. Can you – we're going to reset this?
Yes.
Try that one again.
Sorry. So – I don't know how to word it because I'm an idiot, but in that 2011 game that we played in, Oklahoma State, that we won, Oklahoma State came in with 2 Heisman Trophy front runners and Brandon Weeden and Blackman and Russ, and they had all types of offensive linemen and linebackers and corners. They went to the league. Well, that Iowa State team that beat them, they have more players that have more NFL starts currently than the players on the Oklahoma State team. So I still screwed that up, but maybe I've explained it a little bit better.
All I know is we got guys in the league, and I'm excited about it. So what is your take on this? What's the take? Who do you like?
What was the game again?
Oh my gosh. The Oakland Raiders.
Oakland at home.
Give
me Oakland. They're going to win at home. It's going to be by about three at the buzzer, but it's going to be more than what? Would you say it was a one-point line?
Yep.
Here's the tweet. I got it. Fun fact. Iowa State's 2011 football team has more career NFL starts than the Oklahoma State team they upset in 2011. Boom.
Gosh, it Brent sounds so much better when Brent types it as yeah, when you say it.
Oh, Brent
when Brent words things. Which, can we, side note, away from the Oakland-Kansas City game, Brent is doing the game with Sage. Sage Rosenfels is 6'5". Brent Bloom is not. And one of the funny things about that is they can't stand him up at the same time. So if Brent... They do the same thing with like Gus Johnson, because Gus Johnson's a little guy. He's a little man, mm-hmm. too. And so they'll either have him stand on a crate, or they'll have them both seated for the stand-up shots, because otherwise it looks like it's Sage is calling the game with his little brother. Right. And his school. Little brother is in elementary school.
Have him seated.
His redheaded stepbrother. Sorry, Bloom.
Yes. Yeah, we still love you, buddy.
I've got Oakland.
We love you, buddy.
Absolutely. Okay, so Jeff, who do you like?
Kansas City ain't real. Oh, Kansas City ain't real.
Oh.
Guys, the world is turning on its axis. We are on all three for the first time collectively on both games. We all three like the Oakland Raiders on that one too. So, vow of for the public, fade us, please. Go opposite
bet the
of
other
us.
Way.
Just
bet the
run
other way.
As fast as you can from our picks.
True.
So we're there. That's it, guys. So we got West Virginia we got Texas Tech covering and Oakland covering.
All right. I think that's all that we got today. Anything else that we missed? Baseball. Oh, my Rangers. Oh, my God. I apologize to everyone out there.
Let's not go there.
I apologize.
We can't talk about Cole Hamels and just total implosion of the last two months of this season.
We do have to have a conversation about inflammatory comments made by one Zach Spears about fans of baseball teams across the country.
Here's my thing.
We have to have this conversation.
The only reason why I include Denver sports teams into allowing people in Iowa to be fans of them is because of you, Jeff Woody, because you're a Denver Broncos fan. And that's why
I can pick whoever the hell I want to.
No, you can't. You can't.
Yes, I can.
You can't choose a team unless you've been to it more than one home game of theirs. That's a rule.
No.
Yeah. I want to be a fan of the Steelers. Oh my God.
I think that's a great rule, Zach.
Thank you.
We got a lot of people. How many times did you guys see last night on Twitter?
Oh my God.
Last night on Twitter, the Red Sox lose. Here we go, Cubbies. Like, give me a break.
Exactly.
Okay.
That drives me mad.
You gotta pay money.
So I am a Broncos fan because in Iowa, there is no affiliation. You could be a Chiefs fan. You could be a Vikings fan. You could be a Bears fan. You could be a Packers fan. Or you could pick anybody else because nobody really cares. So the reason I'm a Broncos fan.
Skull Vikings, let's win this game. Sorry.
Reason I'm a Broncos fan is because I saw John Elway do a helicopter, and as an 8-year-old, I thought, that's cool, and I started rooting for that team. All of a sudden, I became a Broncos fan. So, you can root for anybody you want. You grew up in Dallas, which is so different than growing up in Iowa, where there's literally not a professional sports team for 4 hours. So, you can pick anybody you damn well please. And I picked the Broncos, and other people like Austin Narber, like the Red Sox and the Miami Heat. It happens.
That makes me want to vomit right there. Sorry, Narber.
You're a Knicks fan.
Of course I'm a Knicks fan. Why wouldn't I be a Knicks fan? I grew up listening, watching. John Starks, Patrick Ewing. Come on, dude. Let's go.
Yeah,
dude.
So you randomly, arbitrarily picked another team. Huh?
No. Yeah, I was born. Hey, listen to this. Derek Jeter started it all, man. I'm a New York guy. Jeter made me do it.
Austin, you've been to Madison Square Garden and to Yankee games.
Yes, right? I have.
Thank you.
But when he started being a fan when he was a kid, does that mean that he had to have gone to the Bronx when he's six to go watch a team in Iowa?
Are we saying that Jeff hasn't ever been to
a
Broncos game?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Oh, I didn't know that.
I've been to Broncos games in Arrowhead. I've never been out to – never played, watched a game in Denver.
Yeah.
Well, how about you take a trip for once? Good God.
Jeff, there is one caveat, though. if your dad or your family grew up, raised you as a fan of another team, and that's your team, that's fine. I have no complaints with you. I would have to take that up with your grandfather or your father about why they raised you in Dallas, Texas, to cheer for the Philadelphia Eagles. Okay? that's what I have problems with. Why?
Here's the deal. Here's the deal. We just want to encourage our, you know, sports is great. Go see your team in their home arena. There's nothing like it.
Correct. And by the way, you brought up Austin Arbor. If you guys don't follow him on Twitter, he's the best Cyclone Twitter follower in the history. I didn't know who he was. All I knew is that he went to high school with Jeff Woody like 3 years ago and started following him, and he completely changes the game on Twitter. He is what I believe he calls it the Rape Cyclone as his
Rapey Cy as his avatar.
It's the best.
Freaking terrifying metal head mascot that they had back in the 70s when they were playing at Clyde Williams.
Yes, and he is the funniest. His Twitter is at Austin, A-U-S-T-I-N. He spells his Austin correctly, unlike our Austin.
That's false.
A-U-S-T-I-N-N-A-R-E-R. Austin. So that is him.
Yeah, that's why I'm unique and he's not. So.
You're unique for a lot of reasons, Austin.
There ain't no doubt, brother.
Oh, that'll do it for us. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Barely Audible on CycloneFanatic.com. Make sure you tune into us each week as we talk all things Iowa State football, breaking down games, schemes, assignments, stats, and previewing Cyclones games. We'll talk to you next week. Go State. Peace.